Hello, everybody. Did I not have my automatic start tonight? This is Kim Justice, the host of Brain Injury Radio, here on Wednesday night, somewhere in Middle America. So happy to be here and glad you could join me tonight. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and all of the live shows are archived immediately afterward for on-demand listening, which is pretty cool. So if you ever pop in on the middle half of a show and you are very interested in that topic, or if you're just feeling, oh, like you need a little support or understanding, you can go to the archive and listen to Brain Injury Radio anytime you like. We're really glad for that. Also want you to check out our site, excuse me. Yes, Les Paul.
The only reason I came on is I heard you acting like you couldn't be heard. You can be heard plain and clearly. I'm not sure if it's broadcasting through Blog Talk or the other new chat room. Because
okay,
I have them both open.
Thanks. I just got the old studio open, and I guess what took me back is that my music didn't play, and I put my audio start
okay.
on. But thank you for letting me know. I hate to
well,
think I'm talking
what I
to
just
no
did.
One.
It's not
that?
In the new room right now. It says start broadcasting. There's a button to click on that one, and I'm not hearing it through that one.
Yeah, I'm not
even
in
typed
there.
In it.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm just I'm in our regular old
okay.
studio. I'm not ready to start doing shows over there
okay.
yet. So, but
okay.
thank you for letting me
well, you
know
got
that
one guest and the other one.
Oh, okay. Well,
just thought I'd let you
good.
Know.
I appreciate that. Well, yeah. Someday I'll multitask it all. You can keep an eye on that chat room and let them know. If they want me, they need to come over here. Or you
okay.
can send up a smoke signal, and I'll explain that to everybody in just a minute, and we'll talk to you very soon. But thank you for
you
letting
don't
me know.
Me really tickled.
Now I know to
okay.
Unmute your mic right away when you put it up, because you could have just as easily been telling me, audience, that my mic was muted and that
well,
nobody was
I
hearing
did,
a word I was
know.
Saying. Well, thanks. Thanks so much.
Well, you go right on with your show. I just wanted to let you know that, and have a great show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I just sent you a message. I'm sorry I didn't even realize that you had called earlier, but I texted you the information you wanted.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. We'll talk a little later. Everybody, that was Les Paul Morgan. He's our Tuesday night host of Dream Catchers, and I encourage you to check out his show. It's very good. What he was talking about is that we're in the process of making a change in our studio situation. We've been using Blog Talk Radio as a conduit to transmit our shows all over the world, and now we're going to be having our own studio. And so this is a time of transition, and I'm in the old chat room in the old studio, doing what I know how to do right now. As the guest, I've been checking out the new chat rooms the last couple of weeks, but until I know how to figure out all of the technology, I'm not going to mess with that when I have a guest. So I'm going to keep learning on other people's shows. And so hopefully this one will go on without a hitch. But if you are in the other chat room and you want me, either join me in this chat room or feel free to call in. And first, I am doing a little bit of housekeeping, and that's part of it. And then I have the guest, and then we do a little question and answer after the guest. And the back part of our show is some great indie music and casual chat. And maybe then I'll try to find the new chat room, but probably not. So here I am. If you want to call in tonight, we're also encouraging you. The old number that you guys have called in on, 424-243-9540, still works. Don't panic about that. But we are going to be transitioning as we transition into this new studio, and we are trying to get people used to the new phone numbers now so that when this thing happens, maybe a month down the road or so, there won't be people calling the old number wondering where we went. So I'm going to be announcing those numbers, and I guess I'm posting it in the wrong chat room, but maybe somebody in the new one, I'll Talk Slow, can post it over in that one as I'm posting over here. But our new numbers are going to be, and this is encouraging, they're toll-free numbers, both in the U.S. and outside the U.S. So our new telephone number, and it is active now, so if you wanted to break the old habit and switch over to the new one a little sooner, you can call 855-473-3711. Again, that's 855-473-3711. That is in the USA. If you happen to be out of the USA and you want to call into the show, we also have a new number, and that's 202-559-7907. Again, outside the U.S., 202-559-7907. So, Recovery Now is the name of this show, and we're a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics, or guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load through our journey of recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We recovery program because it is in the We that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Most nights we have a featured guest or we'll introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The back half of the show is open mic and some great indie music sure to inspire. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, and if you want to contact me or have any questions about me, my website is inaflash.org. That's inaflash.org. So, I think I was going to make one other announcement, and then I'm going to bring my guest on. I'm glad Les Paul called to tell me that my mic was actually opened. I thought he was going to tell me it wasn't, and I thought, geez, I haven't even muted it yet tonight. It's a little premature for that to be happening. But in any case, also check out our Peer Support Line website, and that is the number 4. peer11.org, 4peer11.org. That website is, as I say, for our peer-to-peer support line. And eventually, we're hoping that 24 hours a day, one survivor would be able to call and talk to another survivor. At this point, I think we have about 8 hours a day, maybe 7 hours a day covered. And what we're doing until we get the rest of the volunteers lined up is they are getting a recording, so it won't be a surprise to people calling in, but they're being routed into these shows from 5 until 10 p.m. I believe that's right, 5 until 10 p.m. But if you are looking for an additional source of purpose and you have 4 hours a month, a mere 4 hours a month, then you could volunteer. That's all we're asking for in time to answer calls, and you are thoroughly trained about what we do and what we don't do, and it's just very rewarding. I can say as a host on Brain Injury Radio and for those I know who are working on the Peer 411 line, it's really a good feeling to be able to reach out and help another survivor, and in doing so, that helps us. And both parties learn and feel supported and identified with. And I just think that that is huge. Peer-to-peer support is just, I think, elemental as one of the ingredients toward a successful recovery, so that you're not out there alone in your own mind projecting and going over things that may not be reality, or they may be a painful reality that you need some help, some extra shoulders to help you bear, and you can find that in support groups. If you don't have a support group in your area, or if you're unable to make it to one, I believe Brain Injury Radio is one of the best resources in the world to be able to use for that, and the 4-Peer-1-1 line will also. And I guess 13 hours a day, I'm getting a message beamed down from not Scotty, but Craigie. 13 hours a day we have coverage on that peer-to-peer support line. So hopefully you will take advantage of that. There's also information on there about the medical ID card, and I encourage you to read up on that as well. I think without further ado, it is kind of strange to be alone in the chat room, so I can't see what anybody's doing, but to be honest with you, I use a split screen, so I have the studio on half of my computer screen and the chat room on the other half, and I'm not quite sure how to do the logistics of getting the other chat room. So in any case, I guess I'll just be doing it this way, and somebody sometime will have to let me know if there's anyone over there in the other chat room, or you guys will have to start calling in. I'm really excited about my guest tonight. My guest is Barbara J. Webster, author of Lost and Found, A Survivor's Guide for Reconstructing Life After a Brain Injury. In 1991, Barbara suffered a TBI when her car skidded off a slippery road and was totaled. Like so many others, she was not diagnosed properly and suffered the ills of too many survivors. We'll travel through her journey as a brain survivor, as well as her involvement in facilitating the Brain Injury Survivors Support Group in Framingham, Massachusetts, since 1995. She also works part-time for the Brain Injury Support Association of Massachusetts, assisting other support groups, and will discuss the importance of support of the like-minded people in recovery. So that's right up my alley, right? Her book is available, and at the same time, I will thank my sponsor, Lash Publishing. That's Lash like an eyelash, L-A-S-H, Lash Publishing, and their website is lapublishing.com. I encourage you to go over and look at Barbara's material, as well as all of the other resources on Lash Publishing. It's a wonderful site for those of you that don't know. I'll tell you two things. First of all, they only publish brain injury-related material for survivors, caregivers, professionals, and other interested parties. And the other thing, write down that lapublishing.com is the magazine that is just wonderful. If you haven't signed up for it already and you're a regular, I can't believe it, but if you're a newcomer, you've got to go to that website, and you'll see over on the left-hand side toward the top, Brain Injury Journey. And when you click on that, it'll take you to the subscription page for the magazine. And at the top portion, it will show you the hard copy of the magazine that you can pay for and have sent to your house. Or if you scroll up a little, it will say, click here for the free, can't beat the price, online version of the magazine. And like I say, I really encourage you to look at that. There are some wonderful articles by some wonderful people, and they're just really great. But I'm going to let Barbara tell you a little bit more about that and the importance of support groups. Let me find Barbara here on the panel and see if she's here. I see that somebody else logged in as the host, and so I'll probably be losing this chat room that I'm not in also. So whoever else is logged in as the host, could you please log out and log in as yourself? Thanks. Barbara, how is it in Massachusetts tonight?
Hi, Kim. Well, it's still pretty cold out here, but I don't know if it's as cold as it is here as it is for you.
I'm
think we were at
sure.
10 degrees.
Yeah, something like that. We're at 5 or 10. We had a little dusting of snow last night, but I'm grateful we're not getting, closer to your neck of the woods where they're just getting humongous amounts of snow, and we haven't had that so much, but just the relentless blistering cold has been pretty rough. We were talking last night and on with Les Paul, who called earlier, and Les, do me a favor, press 1 again so your question mark will go down, because if you do have something else important to tell me, I want to know. I want to be able to know that you're ringing me again, and to give me some warning. And but in any case, we were talking last night. There's a few of us that have hardware in our head from surgery that we have, and the blistering cold. It's almost like a lightning rod or some kind of a conductor that when it gets extremely cold, the barometric pressure changes, or it's extremely hot, it causes us a lot of grief in the form of pain. And we were talking about the fact that the pain, you know, carrying pain around with you all the time leads to a lot of fatigue, which can lead to a lot of anxiety. And it's kind of like chasing your tail. And so, I'm waiting for, we had a balmy 40 the other day that snuck in the middle of the minus 20 wind chills and the single digits. And I thought, wow, that's really something when 40 feels good, isn't it?
Yeah, we had one of those days too. Yeah, really. It's supposed to get warm over the weekend here. So we're all kind of hanging on, waiting for that to happen.
Yes. Yes. Well, I don't know. I try really hard, and you're probably going to be addressing things like this, but I try very hard to live one day at a time, because if I sit here and look at where we are in January and think of the rest of the winter, you know, sometimes, not with everybody, but I get a little bit of a letdown after the holidays. There's that rush and 1,000 miles an hour and sensory overload and full basket and vroom around the holiday time. And then this crash, you know, just after New Year's, where you just kind of look out, you know, on the 3rd or 4th of January going, wow, January, February, March, you know, brr, as your teeth are chattering, and I'm forever, you know, going, no, just a day at a time, you know, this is how we get through recovery, this is how we get through the winter, this is how we get through broken relationships, it's how we get through life a lot of times, is just trying to keep a day at a time, which doesn't mean we don't plan for the future, but you know, we just try to deal and cope a day at a time in bite-sized morsels that are easy enough to handle so we don't drive ourselves crazy. But before I take over the show, and since you're the guest here, and I had a little bit of technical stuff at the beginning, I have no chat room at all now from whoever logged in, so I'm just going to ignore that whole thing tonight and do our interview, Barbara, and then if anybody has questions, they're just going to have to call in, and I'll give them those numbers again when we're finished, but in any case, Barbara, I did give them just a little bit of an intro that in 1991, and talk about slippery road, was it in the in the winter? Tell us, I guess, why don't we start at the beginning with where your intro to the brain injury journey began?
Okay. Yes, you gave me a nice intro and you covered the basics. It was in 1991. It was a car accident. It was in the winter. It was right after a snowstorm, but the roads were still slippery and somebody skidded into me. And my car was total, but I didn't have an obvious head wound. I had a pretty severe case of TMJ, the neck, jaw, shoulder injury, and I thought I couldn't think for the longest time because I was just in so much pain from those injuries. I couldn't even chew tough food. My food had to be soft for a while. I couldn't yell. I couldn't sing. I couldn't talk on the phone very long. I was just in a lot of pain in the beginning, so I thought that's why I couldn't think. And then as I gradually began to heal physically and I started to do more, I began to realize that something was very wrong. I was a wife and a mother of an 8-year-old and managed a house, and I had worked professionally in banking and teaching and healthcare, and here I was having trouble with my memory and finding my words and writing notes and reading and remembering what I was reading and organizing my thoughts and doing math. And I was a bank officer, and I literally could not hold 2 + 2 in my head long enough to get 4. It was just incredible, and I didn't know why. And I was having big problems with noise and confusion and children and crowds. They quickly overwhelmed me, so it was pretty tough to be around my little 8-year-old sometimes, who just, you know, they don't know that you need peace and quiet, and I didn't know why. So I was getting frustrated, and I was having meltdowns in the afternoon when I was trying to cook supper and was used to, you know, juggling 4 or 5 things at once, supervising my son and answering the phone and, you know, cooking on the stove and setting the table, and I couldn't do it. And I was getting pretty depressed. But fortunately, you know, you wonder how these things happen sometimes, but my son had some trouble in school, and I sat through some testing with him, beside him, watching him go through the testing, and I was doing it in my head. And I realized that I was having more trouble with the testing than he was. Here I was, a college graduate, and he was 8 years old, and he was diagnosed with a memory problem and some processing problems. So I mentioned this to one of my doctors, happened to be my rheumatologist that I'd been seeing the longest, and she referred me for some testing. She said, you need a neuropsychological exam. She had been a primary care, fortunately, another one of those fortunate things. She had had the background to pick up on things. And she referred me to she recommended my health to my health insurance company. They put me off for a while, kept calling me and asking me if everything was okay. And I said, no. And are you still having the problems? And I said, yes. But to tell you the truth, I didn't really push it because I didn't want anything to be wrong with my brain. I didn't know what you could do about it if there was something wrong with your brain. So
right.
I just kind of, like, you know, I don't want a diagnosis that I can't do anything about, so just maybe it'll go away if it's not diagnosed, I guess. I don't know. But finally, I had the testing, and the neuropsychologist who did the testing told me that I was doing great because even though I showed signs of a brain injury, I was doing great because I was figuring out my strategies. Well, the story of my strategies that I told her was how I was doing grocery shopping now. I mean, it took me 3 days to do grocery shopping now. I had to spend a day making out the list, you know, figuring out some meals and what I needed to purchase and what I had, and get it in the order of the store as much as I could so I wouldn't be like Charlie on the MTA going around the store trying to find things. And Charlie on the MTA is a song we have here in Massachusetts for those who aren't local. It's a famous drinking song, but it's it's Charlie on the MTA who gets lost on the MTA. So anyway, people around here understand what I'm saying when I say that, but I'm sorry if it sounds strange. It's and I'm excuse me. Anyway, and then in the store I had to wear my sunglasses because the lights bothered me, and I had to go during the day because the crowds bothered me, and I had to time it so that my son could help me haul in groceries when he got home from school because I was just too beat and too tired and I couldn't lift anything heavy. And then I better have remembered to pick up a frozen pizza for supper because I wasn't going to be able to cook supper. And then I was going to be on the couch the next day. So here it was 3 days to do something simple like grocery shopping, and she tells me I'm doing great. Well, I started seeing a psychologist because I was getting depressed and frustrated, and I asked her, mm-hmm. I said, you know, do you know if there's any help out there for something like this? And she said, no, I don't. And I think if there was, the person who did your testing would have been obligated to tell you about it. Well, I remember driving home that day and just about giving up. I really, really was in a dark, dark place thinking, you know, here, I've got this diagnosis. I don't know what to do about it. I'm having meltdowns every day. My husband doesn't want to come home in the afternoon when I'm having trouble and can't cope. And, you know, I'm getting mad at my son, and I can't, you know, I can't even be a good mother. And I can't cook a simple meal. I can't do anything. But fortunately, another very fortunate thing was soon after that, a speaker at my son's school from the Brain Injury Association of Massachusetts was speaking at my son's school, and I saw it on the flyer, and although I was usually way too tired to go out at night, I said, you know, I never heard of a Brain Injury Association. I've got to go and at least find out what this is like and what this is all about. So finally, for the first time, I was listening to somebody as she told her story. She was there to talk about safety, helmet safety. She was working on rebuilding her speaking skills by going out as a representative from the Brain Injury Association. And she began by telling her story. And as I heard her talk, begin to speak, I said, I realized that, you know, I wasn't alone anymore. And I sat in the back of the room, and the tears just rolled down my face. I couldn't help it. So I approached her after, and still kind of making me, I can still feel the feelings even though it was so many years ago now, but it was a very fortunate time and a very emotional time. And I approached her after the meeting, and she said, have you ever been to a support group? And so now I'm really flabbergasted that there's, you know, there's a Brain Injury Association and there are support groups. And she said, I'll take you. So she took me to a support group a few weeks later. And as I sat there listening to people as they went around the room telling a little bit about themselves, I realized that they were getting help. That, you know, they were getting help at this rehabilitation facility where the group met, and that, you know, a rehabilitation didn't mean you had a substance abuse problem, which is what my previous idea about it was. So I was just such an awakening, watershed moment for me. I said, I approached the therapist afterwards who were running the group and said, please, sign me up, help me, what can you do? And they helped me begin my very long rehabilitation process, but finally I had hope, and finally, you know, the tide was turning. So that's how it all started. And eventually, some of us who were meeting there at the rehabilitation facility for rehab wanted a support group during the day because we didn't like driving at night and we had children at home. And it was the best time for us to get together. So they helped us get it started, and I think I got volunteered to be a facilitator when things were shifting. you know, they kind of got one of those calls, can you think of anybody, Barbara? You know, hint, hint. So But, you know, again, I took a leap of faith. I said, oh, what the heck, you know, I took a leap of faith. These are, brain injury people are good people, you know. They're very understanding and patient, and it felt like a safe place to take a risk. And it turned out to be kind of my rehabilitation tool. I began just, you know, facilitating a meeting and trying to make sure everybody got a chance to talk. And as I could do more, as I healed more and could do more, I did more with the group. I created a mailing and contact list and then started getting in speakers for the group. And we've been going really strong. We've had a really active group ever since, and we're really big on projects. We found that doing projects help us build skills and confidence. They give us a way to feel successful about something. And so periodically we do projects for like 10 or 12 weeks at a time. So, and certain topics came up in the group, and we were really, really hungry for information. And believe it or not, I mean, we've got wonderful Lash Publishing now with all of her wonderful materials, but way back in 1991 when I was injured, there was not one book on brain injury. Believe me, not one book. And there were a few articles here and there, and we just hung, you know, if we found one, we shared it with the group and we made copies. We did have a very active brain injury association who had conferences and workshops, and we would go and we'd try to learn as much as we could, and we'd come back and share and try to help each other. And these certain topics kept repeating themselves, so I would take notes for the next time that it came up to help me remember, you know, some of the tips and tools and strategies that we shared the previous time. And these topics gradually eventually became chapters in the book that I wrote, The Lost and Found, A Survivor's Guide for Reconstructing Life After Brain Injury. It was a long time in the making, gradually built on my experience, my learning, and the experience of the others that I met through the support groups. And it's meant to help people after their initial rehabilitation, their acute rehabilitation, after their insurance coverage ends, and here you are, you know, a long way from where you were or want to be, and you don't know how to get there. You just know that you're on your own, you're lost, and that's where support comes in, really important, support groups. And I think what you're doing, Kim, is just fabulous. You've really kind of opened my eyes to the fact that I'm so lucky here in Massachusetts. We have so many wonderful support groups. They're really strong, and they're really active, and they're really, we're just really lucky to have so many strong, active support groups. But
yes,
I know that in the Midwest, in the Midwest, and even in certain parts of our state where there's not as much population, not as dense a population, people aren't able to get to the groups. They're just too far away. Driving could be a problem. Right now, the weather's a big problem. But so any kind of support, whatever kind of support you can find, whether if you can get to a support group, that's great. It's personal contact. But if you can get hooked onto Brain Injury Radio or the blog or the chat rooms, or there's a lot of information on the web, different websites like brainline.org and Lash Publishing. As I'm sure many of you know, we have so much more information now. It's just amazing. It's just boomed since I initially became a survivor. So I don't know if you can imagine, but just imagine becoming a brain injury survivor and not knowing anything about it. Nobody can tell you anything about it. You're asking your psychologist about it, and she doesn't know anything about it, and just it was a really hopeless place to be. And yet today, I still find people coming to my group who are just kind of starting to figure out that the difficulties that they've had have been due to brain injuries that happened a long time ago, didn't get diagnosed, maybe overlooked because the physical injuries were addressed, and the cognitive pieces weren't. So
yeah, I don't have to imagine it. I lived it. And like you, meeting all of these people in your support group, I've been meeting them the last year and a half on Brain Injury Radio, and I was shocked. You know, my deal was in 1995, and it was misdiagnosed, but for 17 years, I didn't have any support. There wasn't a support group then. There's not now. None of the doctors were hip to anything. They said my surgery was a success. It was a visiting surgeon, and then sent me out into the universe clueless. So I was going through a lot of those things that you described, and well, first I was trying to hide them, but it really is kind of hard to, now I was lucky, I guess, when it first happened, I was, you know, I lived alone and I was single, so it was easier, you know, to hide and not disclose and fake your way through it. But man, when the effort, you know, when your processor slows up and you don't know what's going on and you have to think harder and that fatigue excuse me sets in, it's just, it's near impossible. You can fake it maybe a little bit for a while, but it starts to be like carrying a boulder around with you, and eventually, you know, you're going to drop the boulder. Also, another thing that you said, not only people going in with something, you know, where something has happened like your accident or my aneurysm and getting misdiagnosed, but what I'm hearing more and more about, and then I looked at my own history and saw it in about four different instances, is things that were never diagnosed or that you really didn't think much about at the time, but other blows to the head, you know, that might have been, I guess, the verbiage now is a mild concussion is what they're using. But I would just say, you know, a pretty substantial blow to the head. And now that I know what I know, you know, that your brain is like jelly inside a cage, and if it gets slammed up against it hard enough, mm-hmm. however that origin is, that it's going to cause some kind of bruising, hemorrhaging, or cumulative damage over time with the repeated blows. And so, see, I didn't know any of this stuff, and I told you last night, and my audience gets sick of hearing it, but part of the reason I'm here is I went 17 years, had to write a book and become a radio host to hear any of this stuff. So
amazing.
I didn't learn it until the last year. I mean, I had no idea. Yeah, I think so too. And it gave me a resentment for a while at my doctors because I thought, geez Louise, you know, I get on this this brain injury radio and hear hundreds if not thousands of people all over the world telling my story, and I've been trying to tell you for years, even down to that jaw thing you're talking about. I am plagued with that now for every day of my life that I have gotten up. I've had that pain, and you know, when I talk to the doctors, there's no validation or identification. They act like they've never met anyone like me before. And then the other thing I say tongue-in-cheek all the time is eventually when you're finished getting pelted with pills that don't work, you're relegated to what I jokingly call the shrink boneyard. And when you go there, just like you said, you know, they can validate the fact that you're upset and in anxiety. And by the time you get there, you are half cracked. So, you know, there is some things to talk about over there. But they don't necessarily understand about the brain injury until you tell them. And I've said also on the show before, and then again I'm going to shut up, is just that, you know, at least I have a semi-forward thinking psychiatrist now who, I can't really say what I'm doing there, but he's referred a couple of people to me, people that have had brain injury, and he's, you know, simply told them, he deals with them and does probably the same kind of, not too much that he does with me, but then he does tell people because they're desperate. They're like I was when I walked in, that, you know, when you come crawling in the door and can't, some people I hear can't stop raging. I couldn't quit crying, you know, was just full of anxiety and crippling anxiety all the time, you know, and so they go in and they treat the symptoms but not the cause. You know, they're just not familiar with the cause, and so that's when the good doctor has referred a couple of people over to me and said this girl also had a brain injury and is involved with a support mechanism that you might find of interest. She might be able to help you, and I've got to at least give him kudos for that.
And what happens often is if you get locked into that, the emotional, psychological end of things, it's just you're going down a rabbit hole. They see you as a psych patient, and they never see the cause of the symptoms. They don't know. They just don't know enough about brain injury, but it ends up doing more harm than good, I think, which is really unfortunate. I've had some people, and you're incredible. I don't know how you survived it all and stayed sane, because I've had some people, more than one, several people come through the group that have they've really been misguided through the psychiatry system and thought they were, you know, they had all these psychiatric problems that they didn't have. It's just that their brain injury wasn't diagnosed, so the cause was never getting addressed. It was sad. It's such a relief. And it's such a relief to get an accurate diagnosis and then to find out that there's some help. And most of all, to talk to somebody else who's got the same issues and to find out that, you know, you're not alone in the world. I think that, you know, here I am 18 years later doing this support group, and I still hear that one common sentence from people that come to the group, that it's just such a relief to talk to people who get it, where they can feel comfortable, where they don't have to worry about losing their train of thought or losing a word or whatever else might, you know, it's okay. You know, everybody's very patient and kind. We're a very special group, and most of the best people I know are brain injury survivors, I have to say.
Yeah, I think so. You learn to get a sense of empathy and compassion, and I told you last night we were talking a little bit about, you know, nervousness. I was so nervous when I did my first interview, and the way that I, you know, 2 years ago, I didn't know that internet radio and Skype existed, and it was because of a host on another show who had read my book and invited me on his show, and I'll never forget, James got a hold of me and said that he had read my book and asked me if he could interview me. He was an AVM sufferer and asked me if he could interview me on his internet radio show. And I didn't catch that at first. I was just excited. The first time I was being approached, you know, after my book came out for an interview. And so I said, sure. And we arranged everything, and I got off the phone and I was like, what is internet radio? And I had to call him back, and he gave me a phone number and told me to call in just like this, and I was embarrassed. I never asked him. In fact, someday I'm going to have to go back, because he was really cute. About 9 months after I became a host, he called in and he said, you know what's really amazing is that 9 months ago you had never met anyone, you didn't know what internet radio was, you didn't know what Skype is, and now I listen to your Wednesday night show all the time, and it's just incredible, the change I've seen in you. And I've never gone back and said to him, but did you know the other part, that I was too embarrassed to say that to you at the time. I did the interview, but I've never heard it, because I'm sure it's archived somewhere in his internet radio system, but I was afraid to ask him. And so I just looked at it like it was a live interview on traditional radio, and I don't know, I guess I was so nervous or just didn't think about it, you know, that I didn't think of a copy of that interview. But I think it'd be kind of fun sometime to get a hold of James and see if he's hung on to those initial interview so that I could hear what my very first time on internet radio sounded like. Be pretty funny, I bet.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, when I was mentioning this interview today to some of my other support group leaders, I there are people, you know, who are current in the field that hadn't heard about internet radio. So you aren't alone. I mean, I didn't hear about it that long ago. I think this is a new up-and-coming thing. I mean, we have blogs, we have Facebook and Twitter and all those things, but this is the most, when people can call in, this is the closest you can get, I think, to having a phone conversation with somebody.
Right.
The most, the closest connection, I think, other than a phone conversation or a face-to-face. You know, I think you're one step removed in those other places.
Well, and it's not the same as face-to-face, but yeah, like you say, it's even like a support group because there's other people listening, you know, and then they listen in the archive and they get an opportunity later to ask questions and make any comments. And I've noticed that even though we didn't know about internet radio and a lot of people still don't, so we really need to be getting the message out, because one of the things I noticed, and since I started radio, I haven't gotten to listen to him. This is kind of a odd, funny fact about me, but I'm a night owl, and I used to be an avid coast-to-coast listener. And when I started doing radio, I had to quit listening. I haven't heard old George Nori in a couple of years now, a year and a half, but in any case, as I was leaving them, they were having what they called Open Mic Friday, and that was where people could call in and ask questions. And so I think there's a need out there for interactive radio for, you know, many years through grandpa and mom and dad, you know, people would flip on the radio and it would be a one-way deal. You just listen to it in the background. And now for AM radio and a guy who's got a trillion zillion listeners, that a program has been around a million years, to feel that they need to have Open Mic Friday just lets me know that they know that internet radio exists and a whole realm of interactive radio, and that people are liking it and they're losing listeners because of it.
Well, one thing you mentioned in the beginning was how tough the winters can be, and it brought to mind something that I try to remind my support group members and myself to do around this time of the year is, you know, when you're getting out that new calendar and putting that old one away, take a few moments and look back at it. And most of the time, not all the time, some years are just not great years, but most of the time you can look back and be surprised that, oh, wow, I forgot I accomplished that, and I forgot I did this, and, oh, yeah, I was in a bad place then, and I'm doing much better with that now. So I think it can help give you some perspective to look back, like, for a period of time, 6 months, a year, and this is a good time to do it and to help keep those spirits up a little bit. And then there's other things. I'm sure you've talked about this before, but there's you know, one strategy is to try to fit something in your day every day that makes you smile. Just kind of fit it in, make it part of your plan. You know, I'm going to make a point to call so-and-so today, and that's going to make me feel good. Or I'm going to make a point to spend some time reading a book or watching a TV show, a funny TV show, or I'm going to do something that's going to make me smile today, every day. And those little things can help. And then there's another strategy I use, and I used this way back in my dark days. I think actually one of my neuropsychologist suggested it to me, and then I heard it later on on Oprah, and then I read about it later in a book called Simple Abundance by Sarah Von Bresnik. Have you heard about that book?
I've read that. That's really good.
That was one of the first books I started reading because you could read just a couple of pages at a time, and I found out later that she's a brain injury survivor, and she didn't advertise it at the time, but she is. Well, anyway, she created this idea of a grateful journal that, like I said, later on Oprah promoted, and then I happened to hear about it through my psychologist. Somebody just mentioned it to me lately, which is why it comes to mind, that it's really helped her. I hadn't talked to this person in a while, and she just was mentioning it to me, that at the end of the day, just keep a little notebook wherever you kind of settle down at the end of the day, where with a pencil, where you can just write, you know, at least three things that made you smile that day, three things that went better than they did the last time you did them, or three things that went well, three things that improved, three things that made you smile, just things you're grateful for. And it sounds simple, and it is simple, but it can have a profound effect on turning around your outlook on the day, because what happens usually is you'll find yourself kind of going through the day saying, oh, no, that made me smile. I can write that down in my journal tonight. Or, you know, oh, I'm going to do that because then I can, you know, it's going to feel good and then I can write that. You start looking for things that feel positive that you can write down in that grateful journal. And it doesn't have to be a big, long thing. I mean, you can write more. Journaling is therapeutic too, but I'm just suggesting, you know, just a line, a sentence of at least three things that made you smile each night. So,
I'm no stranger, to that. Sorry to interrupt, to that gratitude list. And I think one thing you said is key is that, you know, if people sit down at the end of the night or whenever they're doing this, maybe, you know, another time to do it is when you feel like you're in the middle of a funk, no matter what time of day it is to have that little trigger and make it a habit of writing down the gratitude list. And if you can't think of anything, then you make something. You know, you go to something that you know that makes you happy or that is a pleasant distraction so that you do have something to write down. And in seeking that positive thing to put on your gratitude list, you're tipping the scale of balance a little bit. You know, the other night we had a woman call in and she said, how do you keep from obsessive thinking, you know, like the hamster on the wheel going over and over and over things? And she was talking about a lot about the problems, but not a lot about the solutions. And, you know, that was one of the things, and I didn't bring up gratitude list to her, but what I said was, I talked about support groups and I talked about a variety of tools and persistency and consistency and practice, because, you know, anything you try to do for the first time, you know, drive for the first time, play tennis for the first time, sew for the first time, is going to be clumsy and not feel right or comfortable, and it's going to be real easy to let it go. And I don't remember that old thing, whether it was 2 weeks or what it is that makes something a habit, but I too highly recommend the gratitude list, because you know, gratitude, being having things in your life that you're grateful for, keeps the hope alive in the times that are dark, which you're going to have in the process of recovery from anything, because you go through the grief process, and dark is part of the grief process.
Right, right. That's another important part that I don't think is recognized by a lot of people, that there is this, usually there's this grieving process that you go through because your life isn't the same. And it's very tricky because you don't know how much you're going to get back. You don't know how long it's going to take you. So you're grieving, but you're not sure. But yet the life you have isn't the same that of the life that you used to have. And there's a lot of different stages to it. But I think you have to recognize that, you know, it's important to feel those feelings and to acknowledge them and to, you know, let yourself move through them and realize that you don't have to stay stuck in those feelings, that you can move on, and by recognizing them, it will help you move on. If you're feeling really lost and hopeless, it doesn't have to always feel that way. You can move through it. You may need to see a counselor. You may need to see whatever spiritual advisors or guidance that you use, but you can move through it. And it's part of the process. That was something I really didn't realize in the beginning, that it's part of a process. If somebody had said, you know, this is normal, this is natural, you're in the grieving process, I would have felt like, okay, there's some hope at the end. I just thought I was, you know, stuck in this horrible, dark, awful place.
Right.
And
fell,
you know,
in the pit with no way out.
Yeah. That's a really important part.
Yeah, I always say the light at the end of the tunnel isn't always a train, but that's what it feels like. You know, it's going
right.
to be sometimes. So I want to back up for just a couple of minutes. When you finally did come, you were recognizing on your own all of these changes in your life and trying to cope with them. And then you said that you went and got testing. Was this a traditional neuropsych testing where you look at
right.
pictures and tell them what you remember in them and that sort of thing?
Right, right. Yeah, it was a traditional neuropsych testing, but from what I understand, there's a variety of pieces of the testing that they can use, and there's different ways to do it, but the best of my understanding is that it was traditional neuropsych testing, and what they say is important for others or for somebody who might be considering getting tested is that you talk about the changes since your injury or since whatever happened that caused the change in your cognitive abilities, because I had a woman once for the reason I say that is because of this example. I had a woman in my group once who was talking about, you know, the troubles she was having and the neuropsych testing that she had, and he asked her about her reading, and she said, well, yeah, I can read okay. Well, when she talked to the group a little bit more, it turned out that she used to be an avid reader. She'd read 5 books a week, and now she couldn't do that. She could barely get through a book. But because the person who did the testing didn't get a thorough history on her, and because she, you know, you don't want to admit your shortcomings or your weaknesses. We try to put ourselves out there to be as strong as we can be, usually or oftentimes to our detriment if we're trying to diagnose a brain injury anyway. And if she had said, I used to be able to read 5 books a week. I don't know what's wrong with me now. I can't even make it through one. Then that would have been an indicator to him that there
right.
had been a change and that there was a problem. So that's my advice about neuropsych testing, is to try to find somebody who will take a good history and be prepared to make sure that it's included. Be prepared to tell them about the changes that have happened, because, you know, if you're not noticing a problem with your math, it's not going to bother you if you don't have to use your math. But
right.
If you're a banker and you're having trouble with your math, well, then that's a big problem. You know, you're going to notice it.
Yeah, this will make you appreciate, too. The reason I was asking that is because it's so subjective, and it depends so much, like any other test, and it depends on who you've got administering it. But at a point, I went through that, and I remember I have two examples, and one was back a decade ago or so, And I did those things, and I remember flashcards. There were maybe six of them that were pictures of things. And so she flipped through the pictures real quick and then told me to describe what was in the pictures. And the one I remember in particular, and I don't remember the others, but the one that I do remember, and I've said this before on here, was like a family that was getting ready to sit down at a dinner table. And and I was a financial consultant, so I was handling people's finances at the time, their investment products. So as a banker, you'll understand what I'm about to say more than most. But when I said that, I passed that because I said it was a family eating dinner. Now, if you would have asked me what they were wearing, what color hair it was, if it was a boy and a girl or two boys or twin girls, what color were the walls, were there pictures on the walls, what were they having for dinner, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that. And to go back into a place where you're going to be detail-oriented, have to be detail-oriented, or you could lose someone their entire income, get sued, lose your license, and get put in jail, then that was a pretty worthless test, you know?
Right. And the speed of processing. When you're working in a lot of industry, sorry, if you can hear that, it's my grandfather clock going off. I'm sorry. But the speed of processing, you may be, I mean, I was able to rebuild my math skills by working in pencil and double-checking myself with the calculator and just staying at it because, you know, I really, it was a goal of mine to be able to manage the house again. I couldn't go off to work, so I better be able to do something worthwhile. And so I rebuilt those things, but I still don't have the dependable speed of accuracy to do it in a profession anymore. You know, I need to be able to do it steadily, you know, and be able to check myself and I can trust myself to do it again. But I still have days when I have bad brain day when, you know, today's not the day you pay bills, Barbara. Today is the day you do laundry, not bills because you're just tired or you had a long night or something like that. But and that's what my book is about. It's about strategies for rebuilding skills, and a lot of it is common sense. We just haven't had to think about it before, and a lot of it is breaking things down and simplifying things. Like if you're having trouble with reading, then you might try large print books, like there's large print Reader's Digest. You might try magazines or comic books or children's books. You start with a smaller format, and then you gradually build. And if you're having trouble with comprehension or remembering, like people, common question I've gotten lately is I can't keep track of the characters. And I said, well, I don't read much nonfiction anymore. It takes enough of my energy to read what I have to read and what I want to read, and nonfiction seems to, it's what I take a book once a year when I go on vacation, I take my fiction book, but I think I said that backwards now that I'm thinking of it. I don't read fiction much anymore. I read, you know, what I have to read for work and what I'm working with, but I don't read fiction much anymore. And one of the comments that I've gotten recently from somebody was, I can't keep track of the characters. So I said, well, one of the things you can do is, you know, make yourself a little outline, like a little cheat sheet that you can refer to as you're reading the book. And sometimes I don't make a cheat sheet for TV shows, but people even have trouble, and I did too for a while, with certain TV shows. If there's too many storylines going on, it can just be too hard to watch the shows. But Yes. Thank goodness for DVDs and on demand, and we can, you know, replay them. And I know a lot of us do that too. We'll go back and replay a section, or go back and watch it twice. And somebody said to me, you know, it's great because I can watch any movie, and it's like I'm seeing it for the first time because I don't remember it.
I know. That's a really common one. That is very common. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I think I remember it. And then I'm going through it, and I say, oh, I don't remember that part. But anyway, so my book is about, it's about hope. It's about strategies to rebuild some of these things. It's about thinking how. You know, when if you really want to do something, then try to think about how you can do it. Not, you know, I can't do that anymore. That gives me, I get too frustrated when I do that. Well, think about how. And think about how you can break it down into smaller steps, do a piece of it, rebuild the skill, start small. Sometimes, like I said, it's two steps backwards and then one step forward. And, you know, you might even have to go back to, like, children's books or math books and rebuild them. But, you know, some of that basic wiring is still in there, and it's usually, it comes back a lot faster than you think. It's hard in the beginning, but it can come in. And sometimes you can't do it all again, but you may be able to do, like, a piece of it. Like, there's a fellow in our group who, he just really loves sports, and he loves kids, and he loves to help, but he can't do it anymore. But he also used to work in finance. So there was a suggestion somebody made in the group was, why don't you volunteer for one of the town teams to be their what do you call it? Their statistics guy, you know, the guy who sits in the stands and keeps track of all the
strikes
and the balls and all that, to combine, like, his math and his love of sports and helping out. And so that's a way that, you know, he can take some of what he loves and some of his skills and do it. So it's just, it's a way of rethinking, and it can be an opportunity to start over, but just try not to think I can't. Try to think how, and try to keep challenging yourself and moving on, because then when you figure out the strategies for one thing, you can use them for the next thing that you want to do, and that next thing will be a little bit easier. I'm sure you found this with what you've done. You start off small, and then you build, and now you're going on into a new studio. And I could hear it in your voice the other night where you were a little bit nervous about it. But I bet it's not going to be as hard as you think, because you've already done this. You know, you're already doing this. You already know the basics.
Right.
Oops. Did I lose you? Oh.
No, you didn't. I was just pondering that and trying to embrace the thought, because you did pick up on genuine anxiety, and I saw it tonight when I realized that I didn't know how to make – you know, we've been trying out these new chat rooms, and as a guest on other people's show the last couple nights, it's been no big deal for me to – you know, follow the link and go to the new chat rooms. But, you know, tonight when I'm the host and I've got to man the studio and the chat, and I use a split screen to do that, then I don't know how to make a third screen to try out that third chat room and do all of that. And we still book our shows here on this studio. And so, you know, learning something new does take some time. And in fact, Jenny, one of the regulars, made it over here to the old chat room, and she's laughing because two nights ago, and we've been trying different chat rooms, and so two nights ago she was going a little bit crazy, just, you know, even our listeners getting used to a new format of going into the chat room. So anything new, I think, you know, we're resistant to change sometimes because it took so long to figure something out in the first place, you know, and then to feel comfortable and confident with it. And then, you know, you go back to learn something new, and you've got the somewhere in there, you know, whether you admit it or not, even though one side of you says it's an adventure and, oh boy, is it going to be fun to climb another mountain, you know, the other side is going, man, I just, you know, now we're going to go through another thing about confidence, you know, and bolstering yourself up that you can do this, you know, this thing. And yeah, I think once you do it, it's the fear of the unknown that gets me most of the time, you know, once I have the instructions. But that's the thing. I kind of need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and to go sequentially through those instructions, you know, of how to. I can't be real scattered in my thinking and try a little of this on the right and a little of this on the left and do a cartwheel. And, you know, I just, I can't track that way. I have to track sequentially. And like you said, we all find our different ways that we've coped with things. And when you were talking about memory, I was thinking about one of the things, and, you know, I made all mine up in those 17 years. And when you were talking about some things, I told you the other day that the thing that you described in the beginning about, you know, all the kids making noise or trying to track several conversations at once at a party or that sort of thing, you know, or with me, if I go into like a casino and hear all that noise and the coins dropping and a million conversations, I call that sensory overload, that I have sensory overload. And full basket syndrome is what I call too many new things coming at me at once, you know, that I feel like I'm a juggler who all of a sudden forgot how to juggle and the balls are going flying everywhere, you know, and I can't keep juggling the balls. But another thing that I used to do was what I call linking to help me remember. Now, the only way this works is if I don't forget the whole concept. But like someone's name, if it was Mr. Redman and I wanted to try to remember that, I had a red convertible at one time, well, a couple actually, but one in particular that I'm thinking of. And I used to call it my Arrest Me Red. It was a Mustang power car back when I was younger. And so I would look at that person and I would link him with that car with the red. And he was a man. And so I'd actually have this thing going through my mind, because just going over his name, you know, Mr. Redman, Mr. Redman, Mr. Redman, Mr. Redman, as soon as I go in and I, that little thing I told you, I say something shiny, you know, somebody says something else to me, then Mr. Redman is gone, you know. But if I really look at that man, you know, so I have some facial recognition and I've heard his name, and then I can link it. Linking is something that I used a lot with some success as a tool when I was on my own, because I was just losing information too fast. You know, I had to find a way. And of course, like a lot of people, I lived in the world of post-it notes and cheater notes that you have all over. But, you know, you don't always have one of those handy, and you also forget where you stuck the stick-em note, and the sticky stuff runs out and it falls on the floor, and then you got a bunch of them. You know, it's a big, big mess. And so I was trying to find a different way to do it, you know, and linkage, or, you know, linking it to something that is in my memory bank from a long time ago can help me remember something in the today, because I'm going to look at that person, I'm going to see my Arrest Me Red car, and then I'm going to say Redman, Redman. And, you know, sometimes that'll do it for me. That's one of the little tricks I use. So after you, how long was it again? And then in a minute, folks, I'm going to open up for any questions or comments. I see some of you have your hands up, and I'm just about there. You can call the old number if you're out there listening, 424-243-9540. Or if you want to step out and be brave and get a jump start on everybody else for what is coming in the future when this number is no longer active, you can try to call 855-473-3711 if you're in the United States. And now we have a toll-free number if you're out of the U.S., and that's 202-559-7907. So if you would like to if you have a question or comment for Barbara, please call in on one of those numbers, and as we finish, I'll type them in the chat room as well in case you didn't catch those, and I'll be taking your questions in just a minute in the order that they've been popping up. But so from the time that you had your injury, went through your recovery, and you were in a place that had active support groups, and it was after your neuropsych testing, how long would you say it was again from your incident to when you were connected with support?
I was connected with support.
A support group.
Oh, okay. It was, you know, it was at least a year. It was probably, it could have been closer to two.
That's okay.
Closer to two. Yeah.
Yeah, early in the game, relatively early in the game. Obviously not right.
Well, compared
the minute.
To you, yes.
Well, yeah, everybody pretty much compared to me. But
yeah,
I mean, at least in the first year, that obviously that's not in the first couple of months, but that's good that it was relatively early on. You could start learning a little bit quicker. I was telling Craig the other day that, you know, there were things that I got – you know, I have to remind myself sometimes here and some of the others that I'm a relative newcomer. You know, I've been not a newcomer to my brain injury and now been around here for about a year and a half. But for the last 20 years that people have been connected to a support group or have had medical professionals that understand, I was out there floundering around alone with nobody I could talk to about these situations, nobody who understood them. And, you know, my family was as supportive as they could be, but nobody wanted to talk about the horror that had just gone on. Everybody wanted to sweep the elephant under the rug and just try to move on. And so I wanted that, and I was enabled to do that because none of us got a handbook, you know, on how to handle this when we came out. So we all just kind of wandered off in our own direction, and it took me so much longer, and there's so many things that I still don't know. I've learned more here in the last year and a half from my guests and our listeners than I knew in 17 years. The program of recovery that I built in that 17 years was hit and miss, and just finding phrases like sensory overload and full basket syndrome to encapsulate a feeling or a process that was a change. And one other thing, and then I'm going to open those lines. I'm sorry, you guys, is just when you were talking about going to get that testing or any time you go to the doctor, I'm thinking that it's a good idea to put some thought to things and write down a list, because I find that there might be something that has really given me some grief, you know, for a couple of weeks, and then I have, you know, the doctor's appointment, and I can't remember, you know, what those things were, but they were a huge problem at the time, and it's going to be something that's going to revisit me, but I can't remember at the dang doctor's appointment, you know, and particularly with the testing you were talking about, the neuropsych testing, you know, I think you want to be kind of painstaking before you go in and not assume that that person knows what they're doing besides just being able to put a test in front of you and start the timer, you know, and I don't mean to. Obviously, there's some good ones out there, but, you know, to cover your own self, I think it's probably a really good idea, you know, that you brought up and that I would just add, and that's to make a list and take it in with you so that you can tell this was the me before, this is the me after. Here are some changes that I've noticed since my brain injury, because if you just walked in with the one list, somebody might just think that's who you are, you know, and not notice
right.
that there's a change. But when you're able to say,
right.
column A is how I functioned before. This is column B. And talk slow so they understand it. You know, this is column B.
Make a good
B.
point.
Yes, this is where I've been for quite a while now, you know, not getting validated, being pretty confused, but, you know, now through support groups and you know, the social media and the things that are going on, you know, not so much from the medical professionals, but from survivors, it's like looking in the mirror and see this list. If you pay attention to it, you're going to see this over and over and over and over out of people's mouths who maybe didn't bring a list, so they're only going to remember one or two of those things. But I'll bet if you keep this list and you say, what about, and rattle off some of the things on the list, they're going to be going, you'll see the light bulb. You'll know they're not lying or being led. You'll see the light bulb go off. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then they'll be able to readily give you examples. And that's a mistake I've made, is thinking that I would depend on my memory. And you almost now, you know, with the managed care and the visits being cut back to a shorter time, almost feel rushed when you go in there, which even makes it harder to try to remember when you feel like you're under the gun.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's what you're summing up what I was trying to say is, you know, go in with a list and make sure you note the changes. And what helps me, I mean, I'm sure you've heard it and I've heard it, lots of frustration with not getting diagnosed properly or in a timely manner. But, and I try to think of it as brain injury's a specialty. And yes, we're getting much better at it, and there's much, much more awareness now, but it's still a specialty. There's still a lot of doctors out there who haven't been trained in it, and even neurologists who haven't been trained in brain injury. They've been trained in other areas of the brain and neurology, but brain injury is a specialty, so you've got to try to find the specialists for brain injury, no matter what field you're looking for in the medical field, whether it's, you know, a neuro-ophthalmologist for your eyes. They're going to do a much better job for you than a plain ophthalmologist, somebody who specializes in the brain. If you can, as much as possible, it's going to be much more productive than somebody who doesn't specialize in brain injury. And you've got to ask them sometimes. You've got to say, you know, how many brain injury patients have you worked with? You know, sometimes they say, oh, I know brain injury. And, well, maybe they want to get to know brain injury, but they really don't know it that well. And then sometimes I've heard people in my group, even if they don't know brain injury that well, if they are good listeners and they're open to learning about it and learning from you, that can be a good match, too. So that can be...
Right.
It's really hard. It's really hard. I mean, I benefited from some very good medical care and a very good health insurance plan. And nowadays, you know, we don't get much coverage. You don't get much time with the doctor's office. So like you were saying, it's even that much more important to be as organized and advocate for ourselves as much as we can. Take somebody with you so that, you know, you can kind of help. They can help you remember what went on.
Right.
And to speak up for you, baby, you know, to help you remember what you want to say, that can be a help.
I also really like what you said about the practitioners, because I made the assumption when I had my brain surgery, you know, I had a neurosurgeon and then I had my internist. Nobody ever suggested I go to a neurologist. And so when I did, I made the assumption that the neurologist knew something. But you have to go that extra step further when you're out hunting for somebody who does neuropsych testing or a neurologist. I think you want to ask how many brain injury patients they have, or if they have experience or specialize in the area of brain injury. And if not, maybe keep moving. I made an assumption that just because of their job description, to me, what that meant is that they knew all about the brain, you know, and then come to find out on this show the last year, they got a paragraph in the textbook that talks about it. So it wasn't a good assumption, but it was my assumption, not knowing any better. So that's what we have these shows for, is to give people helpful tips on how to better advocate for themselves. Because, you know, you may want to advocate for yourself, but you don't know how. You know, so you kind of have to be led, and that's what we were talking to one of the guests about, you know, the other night about support groups. We had someone call in who said support groups weren't for her. They talked about letting go of things and turning things over, and she didn't think that made any sense, and it sounded trite and too simplistic. And I said, well, how many meetings did you go to? And she said, one. And I said, well, you know, I always recommend, whether it's here at Brain Injury Radio or a support group anywhere in the country, you know, that you attend 4 to 6 meetings before you make a judgment or a decision. Because each group has a personality just like each person, and within a group, the dynamic will change from week to week. And when they say things like live in the day or turn it over, there is a formula to learning how to do that. But if you just hear the phrase once or twice and you don't have the instruction of how you do that, you know, you really need to go back to hear, as Paul Harvey would have said, the rest of the story, and give yourself a chance, because you really can't say that something doesn't work for you. I joke about my husband. He's one of those people that if food, I'm one of those who will try any kind of food just to see if I like it or not, you know, take that one bite just to see. My husband's one of those people that if it looks funny and he turns up his nose, he won't even try it. And I can't tell you how many times I've coaxed him to try something, and he's wound up, that sour look has come off his face. And I know which things, you know, I know him well enough now, which things to probably not have him try and, you know, which ones to have him try. And suddenly that sourpuss comes off, and he's kind of, wow, that's pretty good. And I'm like, yeah, you know, but you never would have known if you didn't try it. You know, I think it's a lot that way in support groups too. And I've also always said that I know that everybody might not think they're in need of, or the type or whatever, that, you know, they just don't want to do support groups. And that's fine. You can make it as hard or as easy on yourself as you want to. You know, choice is something we all have a right to. But that was why I'm here, is I want people to be able to have the choice. If they decide after a fair shot that one treatment or another, or one type of support or another is not their thing, then that's cool. But you really got to give it a chance, and then make that decision with, you know, some knowledge under your belt of what you're really dealing with, I think. But Barbara, I know Barbara's on the East Coast, and we are getting a stack up here, and I'm sorry I've kept prattling on, but again, my guest tonight is Barbara J. Webster, author of Lost and Found, A Survivor's Guide for Reconstructing Life After a Brain Injury, and it is available through Lash Publishing, and that's at lapublishing.com, which I will put in the chat room, that is operating now. And Barbara, do you want to start with a couple questions, comments? Do you have something to say before we go to the switchboard? What do you want to do?
I just want to make one more comment, and that my book is a lot about tips, tools, and strategies. And one of the ways to help you figure out what kinds of strategies work best for you, and this is because you kind of triggered the thought when you were talking about how you link words, and that's a strategy that works for you. Well, a general, something in general that might help you figure out which strategies might work best for you is to think about your learning strengths and I say that we are all smart in some ways and less smart in some ways. We all have a learning strength. Generally, as we're growing up as kids, we're expected to learn a lot in school auditorily through our ears, just hearing it and getting it. We've gotten a lot better about that since I was a kid in school, where teachers are trained and sometimes required in school to present material in different ways so that you not only hear it, but you also see it and you also get to work with it, especially in grade school. But if you're didn't get a lot of that exposure and you're a little older and it just didn't exist like it didn't for me, it's something to think about. And the other thing to think about is many times these things change after a brain injury. You may not process auditorily or with your ears as well as you used to. So if that was your learning strength before, if you used to be able to just hear it and get it and do it, and now you've got problems processing information through your ears, that's not going to be your strength anymore. So think about how you do things and what things work. Kim's figured out how she links things. It sounds like she makes a picture when she hears a word and she links the sounds of the word. But think about, like, for example, when you're trying to find your way around, you need to need directions. Do you get it when you hear it? Do you need somebody to... let me start over. Do you get it all right when you hear it, or do you get it better if you study a map first, or do you get it better if you ask for landmarks and you're looking for, you know, turn left at the red building, or, you know, or do you get it better when you just let your GPS, you know, guide you and cross your fingers that it works and you don't hit a dead zone. So think about how my GPS drives me nuts, but because I don't process as well auditorily and I like to go the way of the fewest turns, so it's the fewest number to remember, and the GPS will take you all these back roads and I could never find my way back, and I feel like, to me it feels like I lose control. But if I was ever really, really lost, it would be the thing that would get me home. So I have one, but I find that I do better if I first study the map, so I have a general idea, I get some orientation, and then I look for landmarks, or I ask for landmarks to look for, so I'm more of a visual person. And then if it's something really important, like something that I know I'm not going to want to be late for and it's a new destination, I'll even take a dry run on a Sunday when there's not much traffic. Yeah. So, and that's using the physical part. So I'm getting it by setting the map visually. Visually, I'm looking for landmarks, and then I'm actually physically engaging in it by doing a dry run. Well, that's how I learn better. So now that I know that about myself and I want to do something something else, I'll say, all right, I know my strength is visual. If I really want to remember this material that I'm writing, how can I incorporate, you know, a visual piece? Like, well, with kids, you might, if you're reading a story, you might also have them watch the movie, you know, not, you know, read the story and then watch the movie. Or if you're trying to learn math, you might incorporate some flashcards. You incorporate a visual piece so that you're not just talking about 2 plus 2. You know, what's 2 plus 2? Well, you look at the card that's got 2 plus 2. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So try to figure out, what works for you now, and is it, you know, auditory or visual or hands-on? And then when you're trying to figure out what strategies might help you do something, you can go back to that. You can refer to that. You say, all right, I know that these kinds of strategies work for me, so what kinds of those strategies can I work for this next thing I want to do? It's just, it's an... another way to help you figure out how to do what you want to do, another way to help you continue to move on and give, you know, give yourself confidence and create successes, because I think it's really, really, really important to create successes for yourself. Figure out how to be successful. If you've had it knocked out of you, every time you turn around, you know, this, you're running into things you can't do or you're having trouble with, and it's it beats you down, and you have to figure out, at least I did, my psyche couldn't take any more beating up. I had to start to try to figure out how to make myself have little successes, little stepping stones, and then that gave me enough confidence to have, you know, the next take on the next task and figure out how to be successful at it. So I hope that's helpful.
It is. It's very helpful, and I agree totally. Now, only because you're on East Coast time and I made you a promise, I'm going to get over to some of the callers. Area code 484. Jenny, this is Barbara. Did you have a question or a comment for her?
Well, first of all, Barbara, I love your concept for your book. I think it is absolutely divine to help, and I love the idea of tips, tools, and strategies for survivors, because if we don't have them, we are lost.
Right. Oh, good.
And I just have to say, you have been absolutely wonderful, mesmerizing. I haven't been able to take my ears off of listening to you guys. It's just so wonderful.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. If you get a chance, you can look at the Lash Publishing website, and there's a little more information on the book. There's also a couple of partial chapters on brainline.org. So those are a couple things you can do to get a better idea and get some of the information from the book without actually purchasing it, to see if, you know, if you want, you know, if
now,
it's worth it to you to purchase.
That is impressive. I have to tell you right now, as a survivor who's done 15 months of nonstop everyday research, learning, and trying to find everything and anything I can on it, you having anything on Brainline? Oh my God.
Oh,
and I'm very familiar, very, very familiar with Lash Publishing, and I totally respect them, and I love Marilyn Lash.
Yep, Brainline's a wonderful website. Yeah, they are. Brainline, they're one of their most popular pieces is actually something I wrote in conjunction with the group, and it's included in my book, but everybody loves this. You might want to check it out on brainline.org. It's called What Brain Injury Survivors Want You to Know, and it's a two-page kind of checklist of common symptoms, and a lot of people have found that really validating and something to share with family members, and there's a lot of comments. People seem to really like that one.
I have a copy of that, too, for anybody who's interested in that. If you're interested in that, anybody can contact me if you can't find it, and we do have a copy of that on the studio.
Okay.
Oh, good.
That's on brainline.org, and
right.
It is called What Brain Injury Survivors Want You to Know.
Correct. You got it.
Yep.
Okay. It
that's
takes
it.
Me a while, but I'm just now, after 7 years, still learning to put pencil in hand and write. It's been a long process.
Well, your auditory processing must be pretty good to be picking up what I'm saying at this hour and getting it right. You got it right.
Yep.
Well,
and I put it in the chat, Jenny, both the name of what you're looking for and the website. So if you don't mind, we got a couple other callers, and I told her I'd keep her an hour. I do this to people all the time. I tell them an hour, and 2 hours later
That's
we're still
fine.
Chatting, and we got
That's
a couple.
Okay.
But
we got started late. That's okay. I'm all right.
Okay, good. Jenny, I will come back to you, and I just typed those things in for you. Area code 320, who do we have?
Hey, Kim.
Yes.
Hello. Yes, this is Pete
Kim
from Minnesota. Remember me?
I do. Pete H. I won't say it. I'll keep you anonymous. How are you doing?
Very good. I was listening to what she was saying, and, you know, 10 years ago, I would have probably said the same thing, except a lot more has been discovered since then. I don't know if I had mentioned this before, but there's a couple avenues I've already discussed, you know, neurotherapists and neuropsych evaluations and all those good stuff, but all that depends on waiting for other people to be available, which
right.
is obviously something most people don't want to do. But there's simpler starting points, I guess. I think the most important one is get a grip on how your brain is actually operating. Once you do that, you know which way to go a lot easier because it's always different. Speaking from 5 brain injuries, believe me, it's like fingerprints different every time. There's no single way to do it, but I really wish I could write a book on this subject, and I probably should, but...
You should.
I don't know, it's like the weakest part. I did have an interesting discovery that most people listening would probably want to know about as they're feeding you every medication under the sun, because it happens to fit the DSM-5 now.
Yeah.
But just by chance, actually, I went into a hospital out here because over the summer, it just seemed to be coming apart. If it wasn't the heat, it was... you know, any one of a million things. I just couldn't put my finger on it. So I grabbed my whole pile of medical records, and everybody should have one and bring them with you because it saves a whole lot of time, for one. But the psychiatrist that I ran into this particular time happened to be on the board of neuropharmacology. If you can even follow that. And she's New York, Brooklyn. And she came out here because they rushed too many patients past her and she didn't have enough time to spend with them. But after going through a 26-year-long list of medications and had a current CAT scan, threw that on the table, she kept looking up and down and up and down and up and down. And she says, they did it wrong. And I'm like, you think? And I said, what's your theory? He says, one, you have a tear in your blood-brain barrier. I'm like, that I didn't know. She said, it's 7 inches long, which means anything that you smell, drink, eat, partially bypasses all your normal channels, liver, kidneys, and all that, and has immediate access to your brain. Like fumes, sunlight, heat, cold, any of those things. I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting? So he put me on a medication that pretty much capped those receptors and reinforced the cells, and I was right as rain in like 2 days.
Wow.
Which is odd because I hadn't slept or ate in like 5. But you might want to... if you're going to mention something to your practitioner, that would be it. Be sure they go after it as an organic issue, not a psychological one. Because they'd be totally barking in the wrong ballpark. And it's so obvious you got a brain injury, you'd think they would go that way, but they don't. They go by, you know, pin the tail on the symptom, which has really nothing to do with it.
Right, that's what I was saying. Always the symptom, not the cause. But hang on just a second,
exactly.
Peter, because I would like to have you come back and tell us more about that. As I've said many times before, I don't believe in one magic bullet. You know, we have to have a lot of arrows in our quiver. But one of the things I like about your book, Barbara, is the different ways of finding out what works for you. And I think that Peter's right. You can change, you know, you can change over a period of time. You know, today the thing that works for you might not be the thing that works for you down the road, but at least you're an initial roadmap. I was out there bumping around alone for 17 years, and had I had your book as a starting point to look, I guarantee something, you know, some of the things in your book would have taken me down a path to give me some relief and would have been one of the arrows in my quiver. So, you know, certainly, and I'll bring you back, Peter, if you can stick around after I let Barbara get a couple more questions or comments directly at her so I can let her go as a guest tonight. But there's a lot of things, and that really resonated with me, Barbara, when you talked about in your book the different things and how each of us might relate differently, whether it's visual or the instructions, just basically what you mm-hmm. outlined, because I could really relate to that, and at least it would give people things to try. Because the other thing mm-hmm. that I find very empowering and hopeful is when you have something to try. When you're clueless, there's not a lot of room for hope there, you know. When somebody puts
right.
something in front of you and says, here's a list of things to try. They're probably not all going to work for you, but you're going to find the ones that work for you best. That is empowering, and that helps raise people's hope. And I think that that is a really great thing. So
Peter had a very good point, too. We're all different, and it sounds like he's got a complicated case with more than one injury, but we're all different. All of our brain injuries are different. Our background is different, so there's no one magic bullet for anybody. But we can learn, but there is a lot of commonality, and we can learn a lot from each other.
Of course. Les Paul, I've brought you back on the air. Thank you for putting your question mark down and then back up. And that's something I'd like to just tell, excuse me, I'm choking to death on my green tea, but I just want to tell people that in the beginning, if you put your hand up and then you hit one again to put it down, we'll know that you have a second thing and that we didn't address you already. So, not you, Pete, I know, and I'll come back to you, but just for the general population out there, the way this thing works is when you dial in, at least here, I'm not going to assume that you want to talk unless you do what the prompt said, which is hit one if you want to talk. Otherwise, we're going to assume you're listening. And so if you do want to talk and you hit one again, that will put your hand down, and then if you hit one again and your hand's back up, I know that there's something else that you have to say. So, Les Paul, Morgan, Barbara. Webster.
Wow, such a wonderful guest. You've got so much information, so many wonderful things to talk about, and it's a long, long journey, isn't it? Recovery is not just easy, is it?
No, and in fact, I don't even like to use the word recovery. I like to use the words like healing and rehabilitation, and because to me, recovery implies that you're going to get it all back and be the person you used to be.
Well, maybe I used the wrong word, but it seemed like, for me, I didn't believe it was possible. I have a brain injury radio show, too, and Kim and I are good friends, but the two of us together, I was talking about this with her the other night. How many years did we say it was, Kim, that we both went without anyone knowing we existed?
Well, like 17 almost, years for me and maybe 18 for you, right around the same.
Wow. And you guys are really survivors.
It is such a shame that much life had to be wasted not helping people, not learning how to help yourself, not learning how to do it yourself, and then go help someone else. And now that I'm older, hopefully wiser, portion of my brain missing, but I'm still going. All of us here have got injuries. We're battle fatigued, but we've learned through that battle that we can still prosper and be survivors, true survivors. And I've talked about the medical model versus the independent living model versus just people being able to live their life again. And I think we need to meet with the professionals and the survivors and join up and work together in a new way. I really do. I think that if we come together, I talked about it the other night, that I think we need to do not just a state-by-state march, not just a little local thing, something really big that the world will see to show what brain injury survivors can really do.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea if you were able to market your book to doctor's offices, Barbara, myself.
Yeah. I do too.
And associations, you know, and alliances, those kind of things.
I'm just thinking about the last caller's comments too, and I think
we're many millions strong, and yet we think we're weak. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. And I had a thought, and it's slipping away, and I'm trying to grab it back. I guess I'm getting a little bit tired, but I was going to make a comment about it I know what it was. Was that I think I had the same thoughts when I finally figured out what was going on with me and what helped me, and it seemed like so many doctors and professionals that I'd seen didn't know and didn't help me. And so I decided to try the teacher in me, I guess, and finally I could be hopeful and constructive. I decided to put a little bit of material together and give it to these doctors that I had seen and say, you know, look, these are some of the things that helped me. This is what finally helped me get on the right track, and you might find it helpful to know in case you ever run into somebody else like me sometime. So, I think if we can have a march or a big collaborative, that's one way to go. But meanwhile, we can also do it individually. We can, we can spread the word and just try to do what we can one by one.
That's right, and you're doing it strongly tonight. And, Kim, you've had a wonderful guest, and you've done fantastic yourself, despite the problems we had with despite the problems we had with the new board.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Les Paul. Thank you for your question and your comment, but mostly thank you for your tip up front. I was a little thrown that my intro music that I put on didn't come off, and so I was kind of, are we here on the air? I'm so used to hearing the prompt, and then with the change in studios all of a sudden, we had an interesting first few minutes, so I appreciate your support on that and your support with Barbara.
Yes, thank you.
I'm just thankful for all.
Oops, and we'll bring you right back, Les. I'm so sorry. Area code 518. Who do we have?
Hi, this is Bart.
Hi, Bart.
How you doing?
Good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm not that bad. My best word of advice would probably be just to keep persevering through any situation that comes to, what's the word, standard or this face. And no matter what the situation might be, whether it might be like, you know, I don't know, whether it's like a major one or like a minuscule one, you still have to like persevere through it and just try and find a means to the end. So
don't give up. Huh?
Exactly.
Don't give up. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you know, there's a quote I read and that I use that I can't quote word for word, but it's along those lines that you know, there's a lot of smart people who are not very productive, that, you know, one of the keys is just persevere. Just, you know, stay.
Amen.
Don't give up. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bart. I think that's great. Great advice, and certainly that's, you know, too, what I was alluding to earlier when I was saying that, you know, don't take one swing at the bat and then leave the game if you don't hit a home run the first time. You know, that just isn't a realistic expectation. A realistic expectation is that this is a process that's going to take some time. And so, you know, we need to give it that. We have two other callers, and I promise you, you'll be out of here at the top of the hour, which is coming up. Allie, meet Barbara.
Hi,
hello,
Allie.
Everyone. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Kim, another home run. I have really enjoyed this interview and the conversation. It was more conversational than interview-esque, and I really appreciate the format. I appreciate your offering to us, Barbara, through your book and through your many learned tips and strategies that have worked for you and that you have found to be very helpful for lots of other people. And I just heard so many similarities in our experiences with brain injury. I am a six-time brain injury survivor, traumatic brain injury survivor, all frontal lobe, and my first injury was when I was 3, and my sixth one was when I was 20 from a motor vehicle accident, also in 1990. And as you know, there was not really a protocol in place, especially for those of us who sustained mild traumatic brain injuries, because I looked okay on the outside, even though I had, I forget what Kim calls it, like, I don't know, she said scrambled eggs on the inside. I can't remember, but things were really kind of a mess on the inside. But because of my articulating abilities and I didn't look all bashed up or anything like that, everyone thought, well, she's coming around. You know, this was to be expected, even though I had amnesia and aphasia and I had to relearn a lot of things. And my language skills and lexicon was completely upside down. And it was very confusing for a long time, and I had this when I was a sophomore in college. And so it really set the tone for a lot of experiences in my life thereafter. And I just jotted down a few things really quickly. The concept that you have for your support group novel, this is exactly what I've been wanting to do, but because of my challenges, I'm not going to say but, that's a discounting word. I love the concept that you have for your support group. Incidentally, this is something that I, too, thought would really be a novel hit that would prove to be sustainable, because so many of us are struggling with those very things, and I'm glad to see that you have kind of cut a path through the wilderness, if you will, in helping people find their way out. And I'm just very encouraged by that. I'm very encouraged by that because, like you as well, Barbara, especially shortly after your accident, or I'm not sure if you still struggle with these things, even though my memory has greatly improved, I still have these little quirky aspects of my cognition. So there's not really a rhyme or reason. I can't even always anticipate when something's going to kind of fall out of the bottom of the basket, unbeknownst to me at the time. But I also have challenges holding things in my head. You mentioned you couldn't hold 2 + 2 in your head long enough to come up with the answer of 4. And that was certainly something that I struggled with. And there are times when, from a procedural standpoint, I struggle with it now, and it leaves me at a loss, because if one were to extrapolate, well, how would this impact your life on a more global scale? It's tremendous if you can't hold those types of things in your mind, because everything is hierarchical. You've got to be able to do that. You mentioned it takes you 3 days to do grocery shopping. Me too. I mean, it's ridiculous. And people look at you like, what is wrong with you? It's ridiculous because you don't look like anything is going on the exterior very often. And so I find myself not isolating, but I find myself having to intentionally shrink down the moving parts of my world, life, and affairs. And one of the greater things I have control over would be my associations, even though I'm very, like, what do you call the word? I'm very extroverted. I'm forced to be more introvert-like because of my challenges. I'm not able to manage a lot of people because I'm barely able to manage myself, you know, throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And the degree to which I can kind of contract my world, it's more manageable. Mm-hmm. And it allows me to function, but that's out of self-preservation, not will and desire. And so I grapple with feeling okay with that because I don't know any other way to do it at the present time, but I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. I'm definitely going to get the book. And part of the challenge I'm also having is that I do have difficulty with reading, but because I had my first injury at 3, it really kind of interfered with my ability to learn. And so I have learning style differences, and I don't want to claim a learning disability. I just have a learning style difference. I haven't figured out what would be the best format, even though I know I'm an experiential learner, I'm very kinesthetic and tactile in my approach, but beyond that, I'm not sure if I'll ever be able to really read a book, even though I have a very impressive library, and I don't know with a lot of us who may be independent publishing books through independent means or whatever the case may be, if it's feasible to have books on tape, or if, does anyone know if that's something that is easily convertible, like if I wanted to have a book read to CD, if I could get that done where I could still purchase books and then have them converted to a format that I can easily digest as opposed to feeling like
I think
I'm
you can do that. I did that with my own book. I went to, well, of course, you'll have to own it. We can talk about that off the air, but yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
I would
like,
really like
I
that.
Sell my book in that format, Audible. Audibles have
really?
Books. Yeah, and I recommend that you look at that too, Barbara, because, you know, it was funny when my book first came out, I knew enough. I'm an old dog, and, of course, I was just going to write a book and have the book. But then, you know, I was smart enough to know that, you know, so many people, every time you turn around, you can't swing a cat without hitting an e-reading device. And so, you know, I decided to get it in the e-format. And I swear to gosh, every month somebody would ask me, and some months more than that even, about if I had, when I was going to come up with an audio book, because people, a lot of us don't have the attention span to sit there and read an entire book. Now, you know, yours with the tips and mine is shorter knowing that, but, you know, for a lot of people and a lot of books, depending on the nature of them, I really think that that Audible is a growing market that is stepping over the ebook market and probably mm-hmm. going to be the leader in the clubhouse that winds up putting traditional publishing out the window. I used to be an avid reader too and loved to sit there with the tactile feeling of the actual book and read it, but I don't have that attention span anymore. So, you know, if I can just sit there and listen to somebody read it to me, then that works. So some of the books that are already out might be at audibles.com, Allie, and that's www.audibles.com. And not this book. This book you're going to have to read, but it's a very reader-friendly format, and it isn't a long encyclopedia. So I think you'd be fine on Barbara's book, but you might check Audible's audience out there listening for some of the other books that might be a little thicker or, you know, complex content where you might, you know, switch them out, have shorter things with shorter snippets that you can read in books, and then check out the Audibles for sure. So,
what I recommend for people with my book is to, it's divided into chapters by topic, so pick the topic that you're interested in. If you're interested in working on your reading skills, then just go right to that chapter and read that one, and don't worry about reading the whole book cover to cover. Just read it, read the chapters as they are. as they interest you. Because it's a workbook, it wouldn't work as an audible book. But I know that some of the facilities that work with the blind in Massachusetts, there's the Perkins School for the Blind, and they provide a lot of audible books, and they provide even the readers that you can, they send them to you free. I know it's changed as the technology has changed, but you could check out those resources. And another thought I had while you were talking is that you might want to work with a visual therapist. Now, not an optometrist or an ophthalmologist, but a visual therapist, because they are the ones who will help you with your reading skills more than anybody. I mean, speech and language therapists, too, but visual therapists, if you're having trouble with your eyes after an accident, they can help you figure out, you know, what the problem is due to the accident and what you might be able to do to help you be able to read. They've helped a lot. Sometimes you even need to get different glasses, but they've helped a lot of people that I know, and it's something that affects so many of us if we've had any kind of an accident, because the visual processing is in the back of our head, but our eyes are in the front where we take the information in. So there's a lot of real estate between the eyes in the front and the processing in the back where a damage can occur and interrupt that process. So a lot of times working with a visual therapist for a while could help you. And it's not complicated. As far as I know, people have been helped by things like different glasses or using, you know, a ruler or something to block off the words to help them with tracking, so they just see the one line. Or they might have eye exercises to help strengthen their eyes in certain ways. Or they might put on brain injury survivors often work better with the color blue. You might have a blue transparency on your white paper and that you might find that easier to read, or you might put a blue font on your computer. Sometimes people wear a blue, it's not a sunglass, but a blue sunglass when they're working on their computer to make the screen blue and the font blue, because blue is easier on your eyes to read. So there's things like that that you might be able to do that can help you with your reading.
Right.
So I hope
that's good. And also, I think you made a very good tip about your own book, and I should have mentioned that, is that hers is like all separate books. Like you say, go through the table of contents and see what it is that's resonating with you and read that chapter. It doesn't have to be, her book doesn't have to be a front to back. So, you know, that's definitely not an issue in your book, but I think those are all really good suggestions that came out of the conversation. Well, our last caller, and then I'm going to let you go, is Craig. Craig, meet Barbara.
Hi, Craig.
Hi, Barbara. We've chatted over the years, I believe, here and there.
We have.
You came up here and did a presentation in one of our groups a while back in Washington.
In Washington?
This is Craig Cecilia. He's the founder of Brain Injury Radio, if that helps any.
I may know you from John Breyer then, out of Massachusetts.
John,
well,
I know John Byler, but
yeah,
I don't.
He's over here this way now.
Pardon me?
He's over our way now. So we were lucky enough to be doing some good stuff hopefully coming up. Stuff.
Okay.
Well, I get so many people, so many survivors. I wouldn't doubt that, because you have a very similar book is why I thought that. So we had somebody that did a very similar presentation a couple of years ago here in some of our support groups in the Northwest.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I do know John Byler, and actually he was part of my Framingham group for a while, and he's mentioned that in his book. But I don't believe I've done anything.
Okay.
I mean, I've done some workshops, but they've all been locally. I haven't traveled to do workshops, but hi, I'm glad to meet you.
Glad to meet you too. Yeah. So yeah, awesome. Yeah, awesome stuff. I did not realize you were a facilitator too. So that's awesome.
Yeah, for 18 years now. 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of your groups run by survivors over there now, or is that kind of the trend?
Well, a lot of them are. We suggest that the ideal – I'm also the liaison for the Brain Injury Association support groups for the other ones in the state. I took a part-time job there to try to give them some support and some organization. We were all kind of out hanging out there doing our own thing and not very connected. So I have a good working knowledge of how the ones in Massachusetts work, and they – we recommend that you have two facilitators and that one of them be a survivor or a caretaker so that there's some hands-on knowledge of the field, and then the other maybe a professional or a teacher, somebody, a therapist to help guide the group if possible. But we have a lot of survivors running a lot of groups, and We've got some really good groups in Massachusetts, I have to say. So they're really dedicated people doing some really – I mean, we have the support of some funding so that we get to do some social recreational activities with them, with the groups too. So I think I've realized through talking to Kim that I'm lucky to live where I live, where we have so many resources, and our Brain Injury Association is so active. So, what's it like up there in Washington State? I can't imagine.
Well, Washington is interesting. I actually run the only Brain Injury Association the actual Brain Injury Association group in the Northwest.
Wow.
That's left. They're all alliances now, and it's not been a good thing up here. Yeah, we manage about 600 support groups worldwide right now, and so we're not in your area, but we're close to your area. But yeah, we haven't had need. We pretty much have gone where the need has been.
Say that again. 600 support groups in Washington State?
No. Within the world, we have groups in China, you know, Mexico, China. We're in 17 countries and 32 states right now.
So who? Explain
we're
in
it
to
with
me.
TBI Survivors Network.
Okay.
And what we do is we empower survivors. You know, and when people say they can't start a group, we're on our 7th edition manual of, you know, how to start a group, how to start it, sustain it, and succeed. And
really?
Out of all the groups, we've only had one never fail, and it wasn't for lack of trying. It was just, you know, it wasn't in the cards at that moment in time.
Wow. You have a manual? I'd love to have a copy of that manual. Would it be possible?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I'll email it to Kim, and Kim will email it to you. It's available on most of our websites.
Okay.
TBISN.com is one. It might be a little tricky to find. That's our leadership, and you'd be more than welcome to join that. It's just survivor leaders around the world that join that. And we have about 2,000 leaders that are involved, and you know, advertise your book, get your book out there. It's for survivors only.
I'm having enough trouble wrapping my mind around this. 6,000 groups worldwide. How
no,
do you?
No, 600. 600. No, not 6,000.
Okay.
600.
Well, 600. I
yeah.
mean, we got 30
it's
in Massachusetts,
lot.
And
exactly.
That's a lot to me. But 600 worldwide, and how do you do that from Washington State? I mean, it must
we
be
don't,
all done.
Like, we have each state has its own area. Like Les Paul, who you talked to a few minutes ago, he's our East Coast, Southeast liaison. We have different people in different areas. Montana, our puzzle clubs actually come out of Billings. That's one of our larger chains. We have about 160 puzzle clubs, and they're kind of activity groups.
Wow.
We have like the Stitchin' Bitches. I don't mean to be cousin, but that's their name. They about 60 gals. They started a sewing club.
My knitting group we call the Knitwits.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our paranormal group was on Ghost Hunters over the summer. They were featured. They evidently found something. And so it's like-minded people with brain injury actually doing something outside, you know, because not a typical support group is not for everyone. So we try to create support groups that fit the needs. You know, we actually have support groups that are part of college curriculums in a couple of states now.
Now, how do you find them, or how do they find you?
Well, actually, when I had my injury – they reach out. When I had my injury in Washington State, it was in a in a mess where they were going from the association to whatever they are now.
Uh-huh.
You know, they went from, it became a fiscal thing for a lot of states, and so they became fiscally aggressive, and
right.
so they
right.
went toward trying to figure out how to make money rather than doing services, and left
right.
people in the dust, and that's where this gap, and my injury happened at that time. And so I had a really good neural surgeon, you know, after I came out of my coma, and sent me to the neuropsychologist. Well, I ended up in marriage counseling rather than getting the psychological, the evaluation that I was supposed to. And can you imagine after that doing 3 months of marriage counseling? And we thought that's what we should be doing, you know, because we didn't know. This is what,
right,
you know, he,
right.
they, great service after that. And they destroyed my life for a couple of years. But I, when I did finally come out of it, I was angry that that happened. And that's my part of the goal is to create enough education in survivors that never happens again. And we're trying to pass some protocols, and right now in New York, California, and Washington, we're hoping we'll pass the first standard of, it's a brain injury protocol for doctors having to, you know, document this, having to take it serious. You break your arm, they suspect you broke your arm, they're gonna do what they have to see it. And the technology's there, it just doesn't get taken a lot because insurance companies, and that has to change.
Oh, I mean, right. I mean, in order to diagnose a mild brain injury, you need to do the functional MRIs, and they're too expensive. The insurance companies won't pay for them.
Right.
Right.
Well, and see, I even after I had my neuropsychological evaluation, they assumed what part of my brain had the damage. But when I finally did, thanks to Dr. Amen, I finally did have a functional assessment, they were treating the wrong part of my brain.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, the guessing isn't, in this day and age, isn't working for people.
No, there's a lot of things that aren't working, but isn't it amazing how far we've come, you know, in a short time? It is amazing. So I'm hopeful that it will, I mean, we have a lot of things going for us with sports and the awareness rising. So I'm hopeful that I'd love to be around. I don't think I will be, but I'd love to be around for another 50 years and see, you know, where it is in 50 more years.
Yeah, it has made progress, and yeah, actually Zachary Leisted was one of our high school students in one of our groups, and that was the first concussion law in the country. It was the Zachary Leisted Act.
Hmm.
So that's
Barbara,
kind of how we got our start.
That's okay. Go ahead. I was going to say that I would put Barbara in touch with Craig because it sounds like you guys have a lot of things you might want to know from each other. So I'll do that tomorrow, Barbara. Make sure that I give you contact information for Craig. I think you guys could have a good conversation.
And
thank you.
It's just been the last year that I've kind of kept my distance from the Brain Injuries Association, but I've had the opportunity to meet Susan and Greg and, you know, get to know them a little better. And they're not 100% after my, you know, they have a philosophy of really trying to create services, and so I've been looking at different, you know, learning more about it. Like the Brain Injury Association of New York has some really good things going on because John Blyer, I always mess his name, he has some really, you know, he talks about, you know, how he loved it there, but, you know, because of circumstances, he thought it was time to move on. But he's going to be doing a radio show here starting next month.
Oh, great.
So,
great. I listened to one he tried to do out here a couple of months ago. It didn't go too well, though. He wasn't feeling well, unfortunately. He couldn't. I don't know. Something happened. It didn't go well.
Yeah, there were some pains in the background. And yeah, he was just moved, got into where he just had to stabilize, you know, his you got to have a decent living circumstance before you can do something like that. And he's getting stable, hopefully. And, yeah, he's getting ready to go.
I hope
he's
so.
A good
I hear
guy.
He's getting married. He's getting married?
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I've known him. Well, I wish him the best. If you talk to him, I've known him for a while. He came to, we were writing our books at the same time, and he was part of my support group for a while. And I went to his book party. I mean, I helped him get on the board of directors at Massachusetts Brain Injury Association. I recommended him. And then he left. He spoke at our conference, and then things started to fall apart for him in other areas, and he went out to Kansas where Actually, I'm from originally, but so he knows who I am. So please say hello to him, and I wish him the best.
Absolutely, yeah, he's finally getting to a point where he's feeling good again, and yeah, my journey was similar to his, and it's the lack of knowledge and the lack of support that our supports really get too sometimes.
Right, right. It happens to the whole family, and I sometimes forget that piece of it because I work so intensely with survivors, but the caregivers, they go through as much in different ways, and it's important to remember that and acknowledge that and to give them support too. And I mean, even on an association basis, we're trying to, at least I'm trying to look more at that and say, I mean, we have funding for survivors, but not caregivers. I mean, we have support groups for caregivers, but we don't fund anything. The funding is all for survivors. Well, that's like saying the caregivers aren't important. They don't need support, too. It's not right, you know?
Right, and if you really care about the survivors, you'll keep their supports healthy.
Right, right, right.
Well, it's great talking to you. I look forward to learning more about what you guys are doing. It sounds incredible.
Yeah, thanks for calling. I will I'll check out your website.
Yeah, and that one, yeah, check it in some of our different state sites, because some state sites are incredible. And So awesome. We shall chat again.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thanks for calling. Okay.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. And if you even just Google that, I mean, I'll give you all the information and connect you guys,
okay.
But if you even Google TBI Survivor Network, even
okay.
This is for dummies like what I do, just Google TBI Survivors Network and you'll see that come up.
Now, don't call yourself a dummy. No dummy could do what you're doing.
Well, I just learned things in basic ways. So what would that be? TBISN, TBI Survivor Network, .com. But in any case, I will send you the link to it so you don't even have to bother looking for it. And then we'll connect you guys. But you've been so gracious by being here for 2 hours and 15 minutes when I promised you an hour, so I hope you'll forgive me, but you've been a most gracious guest. And again, everybody, this is Barbara J. Webster. She's the author of Lost and Found, A Survivor's Guide for Reconstructing Life After Brain Injury, and that is available through the website www.lapublishing.com. And I did put all of that in the chat room as well. And if you miss any of that, get a hold of me and I will steer you toward Barbara. But Barbara, thank you so much for your valuable insights and all of your time tonight. I really appreciate it. And I know the audience does too. And I hope you'll come back.
Well, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it, or I wouldn't have stayed on. It doesn't feel like it's 12:30 here to me yet, but I'm sure I'm going to feel it tomorrow, but that's okay because I can take a day off tomorrow. But sure, I was thinking if a topic comes up that's, you know, related to something in my book, we could have another session about that particular topic. It might be interesting to people. Like I've got a chapter on turning a bad brain day into a good brain day. You know, if something comes up that, you know, you think I might be able to offer some insights into, I'd be happy to come back. So thank you.
That's
I've enjoyed it.
That's really good. I've got some thoughts about that, and we'll talk about that too. So anyway, good night, Barbara, and thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Good night. Thank you, Kim.
All right. Bye-bye. Sleep tight. Okay, everybody, Barbara Webster, very cool, and maybe we'll see if she wants to come. It sounds like she's got a few topics. I would be happy to have her be back as my guest over and over, and I've kind of shot myself in the foot. I've had some wonderful guests, and when I say shot myself in the foot, it's because I've made them hosts, and I guess they could still come back on my show. But anyway, it sounds like Barbara has a wealth of knowledge. I know her support groups keep her very busy, but maybe she'd be interested. I'm sorry, you guys, the tea kettle whistle is going to go off and I can't mute. Oh, sorry. Human error. In any case, I really thank Barbara for coming on, and why don't you stretch? We'll come back for some open chat and some indie music. I'm going to give you two minutes and 59 seconds to transition. I've got a bunch of new indie artists I'm excited about and haven't gotten them uploaded, and so one that I do have, and this will be a really good transition, is Donovan Johnson. And his website is Donovan Johnson, that's D-O-N-O-V-A-N, DonovanJohnson.com. And this is his song, did I say 3 minutes and 57 seconds or 2:59? Let's do 3:57. It's a good title, something we can all keep in mind. This is Forgiveness. Thank you so much. That was Donovan Johnson, and if you love piano music like I do, he's got a wonderful CD. You can find it at donovanjohnson.com, and he is a gracious indie pianist who was happy to let us play his music on the show. So there's a time for everything, and I've been wanting to get him on, and I've got several other genre I'll be loading over the next week. Thank you for that reminder, Jenny. I've been talking incessantly through that moment of silence that we all observed while I forgot to unmute my mic after wrestling the whistling tea kettle. So, excuse me, everyone. And thank you, Jenny. What I was going to say about a time and place for everyone, or for everything, is that earlier, for those of you that weren't here, I don't have a new intro yet. So I've been playing around with my own for the show the last few weeks. And when it didn't fire, I'm just kind of like standing out there. You know, even the gal didn't say, "Welcome to Blog Talk Radio," and then silence. It was just, your show will start in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then dead silence. And I was waiting for that intro to come on, and it didn't. Wow. So probably I made a mistake. I do that seldom, but every now and again. So, since there's a time and a place for everything, and we just heard a wonderful guest, thanks again to Barbara Webster, and then had some down time to transition, and then a moment of silence for whatever we saw fit, I am going to go back, and there's a time and a place to say, where's your Wednesday night host from?
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha.
Omaha, you've been weighing heavy on my mind.
Where you come from?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was one of those Chiquitas in Omaha, right when they were singing that live back in the old days. I'm going to start unmuting the mics in just one moment, but I did want to make a quick announcement, play one more song, and then I'll unmute you, and we'll finish out the hour. But I got a call from John Cruz, and a lot of you know that one of my first indies wound up having a inoperable brain tumor, is a fabulous musician. I think most of us have agreed to that. And he had put out a couple CDs in the early 2000s, and then for financial and other reasons wasn't able to get his work out there. And hadn't really kept up with the technology, doesn't even have a computer. But I believed in him strongly, just like I believe in my mission statement right now. I believed in him strongly, and what lesson and what grace he was going to come through this experience with. And my husband and Craig and Les Paul and some of Craig's people were all able to put together a dream and give this guy the hugest shot of hope in the planet. He is so excited. And I talked to him when he had started the radiation, and he uses his faith heavily, so I'll never say he was negative, but he was down. He was down, and he is lit up like fireworks on the 4th of July, and I'm so grateful to my friends here for helping and believing in him too, and doing this Pay It Forward. I got a call from him, and he's local, somewhere in Middle America here with me, and he just wanted to tell me we're going to be going to hear him at a scheduled event at the end of the month, but apparently someone else in the music business here who was a very big supporter of John's in the early days, owned a club and always had John Cruise Blues playing there, and he passed away of all things brain cancer. And so this brain thing, it just seems to be all over the place. And it's interesting that John would be calling to tell me about that. So I'm going to play a song of John's, the first one that that most of us heard and loved in honor of. And as we think of those we've loved and lost in the brain injury community, remember this guy during this song, and then we'll unmute the mics, but Jeff Kohler. So Jeff Kohler, we hope that you rest in peace and are out of your misery and in the arms of the angels. This is John Cruise. Check out his new website at johncruiseblues.com. That's johncrews, johncruiseblues.com. On Facebook, if you're already on Facebook, of course you're on facebook.com/johncruiseblues. And if you want to hear his other music or this song again on your own and hopefully buy it, he's got a lot of medical bills racking up, and you can hear him on reverbnation.com/johncruiseblues. So it's pretty consistent across all his venues, John Cruise Blues, and this is Palm of Your Hand.
Of your hand, like a jewel
God bless you, John Cruz. Okay. Crager, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing. We got a couple of new shows starting. We have Nutrition, and I can't remember the exact name, with Mia Delaney, which will be starting. It'll be a once-a-month show. And it'll be all about nutrition and healthy living with a brain injury. We have Sports Enthusiasm with Brain Injury with John Lee. I'm going to be starting. And, of course, I was telling you about John Breyer will be starting up. It'll be just the John Breyer show. So it's exciting stuff. And it'd be, those would be one-a-month things. So those would be some of the things. And I want to put out there for folks, we have a few slots left. If you have a message you need, that you're dying to say, let us know before we fill it up, because I don't think we're going to expand for a while. I think we want to just get full and relax and get you and just kind of just kind of let the flow happen for a while and see where that goes.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, good idea. And make sure to let us know about that. You guys know how to reach us, and I might talk to Barbara about doing a once a month show. She seemed more than willing to come back as a guest, and perhaps, depending on what her situation is, she might not be able to, you know, fit in a more regular show than that, but maybe she'd like to try doing that for a while. Otherwise, I'll just be lucky and have her back as a guest again.
Yeah, and there's lots of advocates out there that have something to say, and the community needs you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Les Paul, you're on the air. I'm starting to unmute people one at a time.
Okay, it's funny about Blog Talk. The song is just now getting near the end on them. It's that far behind.
He was experiencing a bizarre time delay.
I'll let you hear it for just a second. It's ending right now. Hear it? So I'd let you hear it in. It's that far behind. I've never heard it so far behind. It's just one of those Blog Talk wonderful things.
It's always
get
behind.
What you pay for. Well, no, you don't.
That's really, it's kind of like a round, that word none of you guys knew about before when I brought it up.
What
like
was
the
it?
Row, row, row your boat when you're singing
yeah.
a song over a song. Yeah, that's what was happening. Well, I said there's worse things in the world than hearing a John Cruise song twice, especially that one.
Hey, getting
but
to hear it twice is... Twice is awesome. That's actually 400 times awesome because he's awesome. He's just a wonderful guy, and everybody should reach out and support him.
Yeah, he is awesome. I'll be happy to see him at the end of the month. And now I guess at this new deal, I didn't happen to know Jeff Kohler, but he was a younger type person. Not real young, but like me. kind of.
He's a young whippersnapper.
Yeah, younger than old. Unfortunate that he passed away of brain cancer. Seems like I'm just hearing so much more about brain-related mortality issues these days that it's kind of scary. I'll start opening other mics. I'll mention in between my guest next week is going to be also interesting. Dr. Adrian Harel is an Israeli doctor. He's in Israel and has done work with stem cell research at one time and has many degrees from prestigious schools in Israel in neurobiology as well as business, and they're looking, the name of the company is Metacortex, and they have a location in Israel and they have one in the United States. And he's got, well, I'll let him tell about his theory next week, but they're in the research and development phase. There's no drug that is for TBI. There's a lot of things, millions of things thrown at us, but nothing specifically targeted to the kind of issues that we have where it's taken care of in maybe one injection or one delivery system and not a series of different things just treating symptoms, but that helps stop the the degeneration of brain tissue in some neurological disorders and can help refortify it in people that have traumatic brain injury. And so he should be a very interesting guest. He's got a pretty heavy accent, so bring your Middle Eastern ears, and I'll have him talk slow, but he is very interesting. So that'll be a very interesting show next week. Pete, you're back on the air. I didn't know that my guest was going to be staying so long this night, but you can come back and be a guest. I can talk to you tomorrow and pin you in if you want to come back in a couple of weeks and share this new stuff. I've been interested in tracking your case as you've gone and your journey and the different discoveries that you've come across in your journey, the things that work and don't work.
Well, it's kind of it's kind of different as I'm listening to everybody speak. They're in the right direction, I think, but they're kind of going at it in the wrong direction at the same time. Or going, they're in the right direction, but they're going about it in the wrong order, I would think, because there's too much reliance on what's available out there. When you really just, there's a lot you can do just sitting in your house. I mean, a website called Lumosity, for example. They didn't have that kind of brain training until I saw Dr. Nash back in 96, and that was 9 years after the fact. But after I got hit by the train, I went from 30% function to the high 90 percentile in less than a month. And then all it is brain training, and it's a cheap website. It's like $10 a month or something. But all you're doing is basically playing games. But what you don't know is going on is it's calculating all your functions and really working hard the ones that you are deficit in. So
yeah.
You don't really even realize you're doing it, which is the beauty of it, because it's like you're almost like you're playing a video game or sometimes a crossword puzzle. Or there's but every aspect of the 9 types of intelligence that hits, and it really works fantastic. I mean, the Japanese have been using it for 30 years on their 5-year-olds, and they walk into kindergarten ready to do high-end math, things like that. So it is quite effective, and it's the same thing most neurotherapy providers provide. And that's just one of an aspect of 50, and it'd probably take me 5 days straight to throw them all out there for you. But
well, that's why I was saying that we've got like 10 minutes left in the show, so I'd be glad to have you back as a as a guest talking about it. It's nice, and it can be simple, but you know, like I say, it doesn't seem like that there's a magic bullet for everybody for whatever reason. Maybe they're not psychologically or technologically there yet. Maybe they've been introduced to other things, but you know, people try different things, and different things resonate for different, you know, people at different times. It's kind of like relationships, you know. But
yeah. Well, like,
and Jenny, you're on.
I have to say, I totally agree with you, Kim, on that, because I've had no choice but start over 7 years ago as basically an infant with no memory of my past and no one to assist me, no one, alone, and I've had to do it not by choice, alone. And so I had to learn how to do it myself. On that point, you're right. For some people, that does work. I've also had to rely on guided meditation. I've had to rely on learning, research, on different sorts of avenues. Other people, you know, I have to rely on certain medications that help me for certain things, only, but no, not narcotics, no psychotropics. I know my limitations, but everybody has to function because everybody is different. So their avenue of rediscovering who they are and their new self is individual for each person.
Yeah, I think so too.
And
you
that's precisely it.
Try it.
Most people in the last quarter century, it's always all the doctors, all the family, all the friends, all right down the line. It comes back to wanting you to be back in the fold of the rest of the averages like everybody else. But guess what? That ain't going to happen. I wasn't like that before I ever got a brain injury, so I was kind of predestined for this, I think.
Yeah.
But the point is, as soon as you come to terms with the fact that you're not being rehabilitated, you're learning who you are across the board, because you might have been a real good mathematician, but now you can't remember your own phone number. But on the other hand, you can remember somebody's face from 30 years ago in the snap of a finger. So, and you never used to be able to do that because your brain is never going to leave you with an empty hand. It's always going to shift its function where it's not. So it's kind of hard to grasp that, but you have to do it a few times. Next thing you know, the average person has several types of intelligence, either they're linguistic, mathematicians, doctors, lawyers, book learners, or artists who think visually, or musicians who think auditorily and mathematically simultaneously. Take any one of them out, but guess what? You got nine left, or seven or eight left on the plate you haven't even developed yet. So that goes quite
and
a ways.
When something gets taken away, something else picks it up. Our body, our essence is unique in that it'll compensate for itself, but we don't spend enough time developing and figuring out what that is sometimes.
Can I just say quickly something? I believe
that's where
we should discover the happy us right now as the survivor we are right now, not trying to be who we used to be, what we want to become with that brain injury and work and help somebody else with it.
Right.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
That's what we teach in Moving In, you know, learning to love the new you. And and it's tough. You got to let go of the old one first, you know, accept.
Exactly.
Or not let go, but accept. That's hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Everybody's boat is going to float in a different direction, or the wind is going to just take your wings and let you fly in a different direction. Nobody is going to go in the same direction.
Yep. I think that's true. And like you say, what works for you today might not be the thing that works for you a couple weeks from now, you know, or a couple months from now. So I think it's really important to be open-minded and have a willingness, you know, rather than doing nothing and falling in that pit where you don't see the light, you know, at the end of the tunnel, that, you know, you're empowered. If nothing else, you're building confidence and getting empowered by taking the positive action to try different things. And that's a heck of a lot better than, you know, sitting on our tush wondering what it might be like or just flat out quitting. And we never want people to do that. So I'm all for whatever tools it takes, whatever works for somebody else, whether regardless of what my opinion or experience is, if it works for them and it saves their life, more power to them and God bless. But in any case, folks, I just have a few minutes left in the show. I really want to thank you all for being here. I appreciate your support. Brain Injury Radio appreciates your support. I want to thank my sponsor, Lash Publishing, and remind you to sign up for the free online magazine, the winter edition, is going to be coming out in the next week, although you are also able to get past editions if you like. Again, that's at lapublishing.com. And do check out all these revisions that are going toward our new studio on TBI Survivor Network. So again, for Recovery Now and your humble host, somewhere here in Middle America, Kim, I want to wish you guys all good night and close in my usual way with something I believe that we all have, and that is a guardian angel. Be sure to check out Leah West at leahwest.com. Again, she's on Facebook, so you're already on facebook.com/Leah, LEAHWEST, and keep your guardian angel close to heart. Many blessings, and we'll see you soon. Good night.
Let you soar. higher than earth was.